everyone. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up. Ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 81 is on its way, coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. My name is The Brant, and I am your host for this episode and every other episode, I believe, except one. So I've done 80 of the episodes. And Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of a store that is located in Manchester, Connecticut, called The Portal. You can check us out on Facebook, www.timemachineportal.com, on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Hey, we're also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, which is a really cool board game YouTube and podcast network, and we're really excited to be part of that. In fact, the end of this episode, I'm going to comment on something that Tom Vassell's talked about on Board Game Breakfast, if you've seen that show. If you haven't, you should check it out. Really cool. We actually have some people who play at our store or part of our community in our store that are on Board Game Breakfast. So that's really fun there. Howdy, everybody. This is episode 81. I am titling this one, Control, Control. You must learn control. And that's going to be related to that topic that I'm going to talk about at the end about being the facilitator of a game, because I thought that was really exciting when I heard that topic, because that, we'll get to it. Awesome. I hope you're doing well in New England. It is winter over and over and over again. We now have had 3 nor'easters in 2 weeks. Pretty much all of them brought snow. The one that didn't bring snow knocked out power to a large portion. I know that that sweeps back into the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area and all the way up through Boston and into Maine. And I know a lot of you listen between those areas. And so you're feeling those effects too. And we were lucky at the store to not lose power. And at my home down in East Hampton, about a half hour south of the store, the same. We didn't really lose much power, but a lot of people in our town did. So that was tricky. But hey, no power during the day means board games, so that is that good news. But it sounds like we're bracing for one more storm here, and then we'll see if March finally wants to let go, winter wants to let go, and maybe we'll break some 60 degrees here and smooth sailing. Hey, really excited thinking about conventions this year. Went to Conclave and New York Toy Fair already this year. Those were fun. Unfortunately, not going to make it to ConCon. Didn't make it to G2S this last weekend. There's just so many, especially these smaller ones that you really want to go to because you really get to hang out and play with people, but they're tricky to be away that often. But going forward, I'm excited. I'm going to make 3 big conventions this year. So I will be at Dice Tower Con, and Kathy will be with me at that, which will be really exciting, as well as our daughter, Zephra. So that should be really fun. That will be in July. So if you're down there in Orlando, love to play a game with you, especially teach you a game, would be really fun. Then in August, I think it's August this year. I can't remember if it's July into August. Gen Con in Indianapolis. I will be there with Brian, with Larry, Gary Pope. And I'm going to be working at the Dice Tower booth, and I think the Capstone booth. No, I'm pretty sure the Capstone booth. Demoing at Capstone and just hanging out at Dice Tower and whatnot. So I will be there with all of those folks. And then in December, Kathy and I, again, are going to go to PAX Unplug. Unfortunately, Brian just can't make that. December at a toy store. Uh-uh, not leaving. So there's that. Hey, if you don't know, we have a toy store that is partnered with our game store. In fact, the toy store came first and has existed for 25 years. Right around the start of Magic the Gathering is when the store started. And that's the Time Machine. So you hear us reference that. That's what we are talking about there. But that's what's upcoming in terms of conventions. And then my own convention at my house, VonnerCon, will be in October. If you are listening in the area and interested in that, VonnerCon is now invitation, but it's pretty open invitation in terms of send me an email, portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com, or just a tweet on Twitter at portalgaming60. We'll go from there and chat. But that is 4 days of gaming at my house, which is very fun. Always enjoy that one. I know it's not related to the store and this is a store podcast, but hey, I'm the host. So But yeah, that's always fun because it just goes from playing kids games with kids to playing heavy games with heavy gamers to playing party games with large groups of people to playing just with my daughter in the morning when people haven't arrived yet. It's all over the map. So that is really fun in October. So yeah, lots of gaming. And I've played a lot of games lately, and I'm going to try to run through them all. So that's that. Ooh, wait, no, first announcements. So first announcement is this Saturday, Silk City Board Game Group at the Manchester Library. I don't remember if it's Geek Fever or Geek Attitude. It's one of those two. They're local to Connecticut. I think it's Geek Fever. Geek Fever Games is going to be there, and they're going to be showing off a whole bunch of their games. So definitely want to check that out, noon to 12:30. And coming up at the end of April, it's International Tabletop Day. This should be really exciting. I've been inviting various media people who, designers, publishers, and other media that may or may not show up. We're going to just kind of leave it at that. And should be exciting, though, to check out. So you definitely want to be there. So that is April 28th, midnight to midnight. You do not have to come for all 24 hours. It is not a challenge to play for all 24 hours. We just think it's fun to be open for 24 hours. And we find excuses to do it. We do a charity event. Extra Life. We do the Extra Life event. The other one is Dan Patrice on Geek All-Stars. But definitely check out his Gamers for Cures as well. That's awesome. But we are part of Extra Life, and we do that in November. But Tabletop Day is a full 24 hours of games. We should have some promos available, maybe some other things, depending on what comes in there. Have a lot of events running. I am hoping to get as many people as possible to play Get the MacGuffin. I know this was a goal for Looney Labs on the Dice Tower Cruise, and I'm going to try to do the same. So I'm going to get a copy of that, which is a really light fun. They're the ones who designed Flux. I think this one's really fun. It's 5-minute Flux. So a lot of Flux can only take 5 minutes, but sometimes Flux takes like 35 minutes, which I don't think is as fun anymore. But Get the MacGuffins really fast, and I'm going to try to have as many people play and put their initials in the top of the box. So it's kind of like box topping. A la Blue Peg, Pink Peg, but it's just going to be everybody who plays the game is going to put their initials in there, and we'll see if we can fill up the box by the end of the day. So that's going to be my little plan to try to do. So that should be fun. So definitely want to check that out April 28th. All right, I think we'll move on. I'm going to talk about games I have played. So a couple Thursdays ago, I was at the store, and I was playing, as I do, and I played three really good games. And they're all from 2017, and this made me go, 2017 was a great year. I had 30 games in my top games list. I did my top 10, I tacked on 20 more, and I just played three others that I didn't put on that list that I liked. So that puts it up to 33. So anybody that's telling me that 2017 was a couple of home run games, or games they're not interested, like Gloomhaven or Drop Mix or something, which I can get. I understand why people just wouldn't be interested in those. But to say it was not a good year for games is crazy because I've got 33 games for you, so. Alright, here we go. First up is the Expanse board game. I think I've actually talked about this one before, but I got to play it again, played it four players. Totally based on the TV show from Sci-Fi Channel. This is four player. And it's designed by Jeff Engelstein from WizKids Games, published by WizKids Games. And what's happening is this is basically four-player Twilight Struggle. So if you haven't played Twilight Struggle, that's fine. But this is a four-player. It's quicker. It's intended to be an hour. I'd say it runs about 90 minutes, depending on how many questions people ask and how many cards you have to read to ask questions on. But since I knew it a lot better, play number two, I was able to answer those questions a lot fewer without referencing the rule book, and we moved pretty quick. So it's about 75 to 90 minutes. So basically what's happening is there's a row of cards, and you can draft those cards. In order to take ones at the end of the row, you have to give up victory points. Earlier in the row can be free or, you know, less victory points. So you're trying to weigh giving up your victory points versus taking these cards. So then once you take a card, you have two options. You can do what the card says if it has your faction symbol. There are four factions. There's the UN, which is basically Earth. There's the Mars. I should know because I just watched the show. the MCRN, I know they're called, but I don't know exactly what that stands for. I can't remember at the moment. So there's the Mars planet. There's the OPA, which is basically like the belters, they're called. They all work out in the asteroid belt, and they harvest resources and collect, and they kind of have unionized and formed their own nation, if you will. And then there's Protogen, which is a company that is doing something in the show that I'll leave to not have spoilers, but it's like a large conglomerate company that is another Wang faction in the galaxy. So you're drafting these cards. If it has your symbol on it, then you can do the effect on the card. Otherwise, you can use the card for action points up in the corner. So they'll have anywhere from 2 to 4 action points, and action points basically allow you to do everything on the board. The board is very simple. It's just planets in sections with little boxes for orbitals and then planets for actually putting influence on, and that's all you're doing. You're just moving ships and placing influence cubes. So it's very simple. There's not minis. There's not a lot of dice rolling and other things happening in the game. It's just straight up placing influence cubes and having those area majorities. Long-time listeners, area control, you're like, uh-oh, Brent doesn't like that. So we'll see. So you draft the card. If you do the action points, the card then gets passed around the table. And whoever's kind of, there's like a little track for initiative. Whoever's first in initiative gets a chance to take the card and use it if they want to drop their initiative to the bottom. If they don't, it passes to the next person. If nobody takes it, it's gone. If you do the effect on the card, it's just gone. You can also hold cards by giving up another victory point, and you can play them right before you score, as well as other players can do the same. Eventually, you're going to draw a scoring card, and when a scoring card happens, you're going to pick a section. So there is the inner planets, the belt, and the outer planets. And in that section, all the planets are going to score bonus. Otherwise, it's just 1 point for controlling a planet, and nothing for second or third. But say you're 3 rounds in, then it's like 3-1-0 or something like that. And so you pick a little thing secretly that says where you want to score, and there's 2 of each, and there's 5 scoring rounds, so each of those can only be scored max twice with the bonus scoring. And then at the end of the game, the last one is not used. You score everything 5-3-1. So you can kind of do that scoring as you go, or just set yourself up for a lot of scoring at the end of the game. And that's kind of where this game is at. So it's all about those cards, and they get shuffled up and different things, and the scorecards come out. One thing I really like is when the last scorecard gets flipped over from the deck. I didn't explain that. When you buy a card, you then slide everything down and flip a new card over from the top of the deck. That scorecard, actually all the scorecards are shuffled like basically a third, a third, a third. So they come out because there's 6 of them. When the 6th one gets drawn, boom, the game ends immediately. And that's a beautiful thing because then people are trying to play to predict when that's going to happen, as opposed to all the other scorecards, which happen when somebody drafts them. But this way, nobody's saying like, oh, if I draft it now, I won't win. So let's try to bring that person down so second place can win and blah, 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 blah. And that's one of those elements I cannot stand from area control, is like everybody teaming up on this one person to make this person in second become first. It's like, why did 3 of us do all that work to make the second place person? Like, why do we care? you know, whatever. To each their own. If people like that, do it. But I do not. So this removes that element, which I thought was really interesting. So yeah, this is a really fun game. I really like it. The influence is very clear, like, okay, they're going to drop 2 here or 1 here, or I'm in control, or they try to go here. There's lots of places, so it is up and down, but you essentially start fighting with one person. There's a couple like special abilities you get, and Protogen gets like a nuclear bomb almost, where they can blow up a whole planet, which could be pretty intense. But again, it's one planet of these 20 that are out there. Sorry, there's also the moons of various planets. So that's how we get more, because I realize there are not 20 planets in our galaxy. Anyway, so the Expanse is really good. It totally is 4-player Twilight Struggle. Still like Twilight Struggle better if, you know, if I had to, just 2 of us and somebody said, do you want to play this or Expanse? I would play that. I think Expanse is solely going to be my 3- and 4-player game. I haven't played it at 2. I'm sure it plays well or fine, but there's just so many other 2-player things. I'm happy to have a game that plays 3 or 4 well. And that's nice to be 3 or 4. Because something like Three Kingdoms for Ducks, which is only 3, you're kind of stuck at that point. So it was really fun. Next up, I played The Palace of Mad King Ludwig. So this is not Castles of Mad King Ludwig. I guess technically it's a sequel, but it's nothing like it. So, spoiler, I like Palace of Mad King Ludwig better. I'm not as big of a fan of the auctioning in Castles, which is what a lot of people like. The crazy room building is fun, but it gets old eventually to me, and you're just trying to score all these endgame points and then total them up. What I like about Palace is you're kind of building as you go. So there is a row of tiles that you draft from, and you're paying in swans. You have all these different colored swans. And so you pull a tile, and then you place it down. All the rooms are square, so I can totally see for fans of castles that it's not as fun in Palace because they're just square rooms and they're not these exciting shapes. I'm okay with that. I like the square rooms. I like the thought process that happens. So you take one of these rooms, you place it adjacent to a doorway. The two doorways connect. They have little colored swans in them. If those are the same color, you get a swan of that color. And then all the rooms have a special effect. The special effect is going to kick in when you close up the room or finish the room, which is if all of the exits, now they don't all have four exits, some only have one, so when you place it, it's done. When all the exits go to somewhere else, you get the bonus on the tile. So it's going to be end game points, it's going to be draw this thing, it's going to be collect more swans, all sorts of different things that you get. So that's kind of what you're working your way through. And it's really neat. Eventually, when the first stack runs out, there starts to be little moat tiles, and now every time somebody completes a room, they place moat tiles around the outside of the castle. And those are going to go around the rooms, and they're going to start to seal off the rooms on the edge that have doorways, so it kind of becomes like a clock for the game. And when the moat goes all the way around the palace, it's done, and the game's over. There is a bunch of endgame scoring. There's four tiles that are out there for things you're competing on, and there's a whole boatload of ways to score points. If you have one of each room type, two of each room type, if you have a whole bunch of one room, you get a bonus. These endgame things will say have the most of these, the least of this. You can go down into the basement and then you're scoring points. All sorts of different things that you can do to score. You can also give yourself in-game abilities, but it's pretty clear what you're doing. I wouldn't say the end game is like, oh no, I don't know. You have some secret ones and whatnot. So it's just really fun. I don't know if it's like amazing, blows me away, but it was just that really fun medium weight Euro. I would probably argue it's light medium, other than understanding some of the intricacies. It's very simple in terms of what you do. But that's great. These like medium weight Euros that are really light on rules, but the scoring is kind of complex. I think those are really fun. And people will figure it out. You know, they'll get there. Maybe they won't score as well, but they'll get there. Kind of reminds me of Dominion, even. Dominion, playing Dominion is very simple. Some of the cards are complex. It's when you get to the end, you go, oh, I had 46 points. And somebody goes, oh, I had 26. Wow, great job. I'm going to work at that again. And they try again, and they figure out how to do better. You know, I think that's cool. So, Palace of Mad King Ludwig. I really like this game. This is from Bezier Games. So definitely check it out. All right, next up is Heaven and Ale. So I guess this is, I don't know, it's technically a 2018 release because it just came out here, or it's coming out from Plan B. I don't know. But it was 2017 at Essen when it came out. So, yeah, we'll figure that out. Eggert Spiel. So Heaven and Ale, you are monks in a monastery brewing beer. That is totally what's happening. And so the way it works is it has a track like Lignum or Takedo or some of these other games where you can go as far as you want around the track and you collect an item, but you can never go backward. Now, what's a little different here and why I mentioned Lignum, which people aren't as familiar with, is you still take turns. So it's not Takedo where the person in back goes next. It's just you just go around in order. So there's something to that. Now, where that plays out different is when everybody gets around the track except one person, that person only has one other turn, and then they have to come back around, and that finishes the round. So in a four-player game, you do six rounds. In a two-player game, I know that you do three rounds because they don't decrease the number of spaces on the board, and I don't know about a three-player game. What are you doing? You're picking up all sorts of things. There's all the goods you need. You need hops, and you need water, and you need spice, and you need whatever other things you need for brewing beer, and then also your brewmaster, and they're all on your player board, kind of spaced out, and you need to collect items to put them in your monastery, and then you have a dark half and a light half. Basically, if you collect something and put it in the dark half, you pay the face value, so you might have a 4 water tile, and you pay 4 coins for that, to put it there. And now whenever it produces, it's just going to produce money. So you're going to sell those. In the light side, you're going to pay double. So the four water would cost eight, but you're going to produce resources for your own beer production. So you would move up your water. So you're trying to do this. You've got little, field tiles that you're trying to surround. So it's all hexagons. So when you get six surrounding a hexagon, you'll count up the points on it. And then you're either going to get to activate a certain number of those or move your brewmaster up. So sometimes you want really low totals, so the brewmaster moves up really far. And other times you want really high totals, so you activate a lot of those tiles, but you don't move the brewmaster. So it's all this balancing act of getting all these items, which start in different places, to move up this track on your player board. And eventually they get into like a coin scoring section. Once everything's in that coin scoring section, you've guaranteed that you're going to score points. If they do not get there, you do not score points. So that's a very important piece to understand in the game. And then there's this whole thing, once you get through six rounds, this whole thing that happens where you take your highest tile and you look where your brewmaster is and there's a ratio. So let's say it's a 3-to-1 ratio, and I move my highest good back three spaces and move my lowest up one. And then I continue to do that until they all end up next to each other. And that's going to determine what I score. So it's just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 coins, whatever it is. And it's multiplied by the number my brewmaster is on. So moving up your brewmaster helps that ratio and helps that multiplier, but it'll slow down the movement of your other items. Anyway, the key is it's this big balance of a bunch of different resources. You don't want to have a lot of one and not a lot of the other, although that can also help. So it's thinky, and things just happen as well. So as long as you're focused on getting everything into point scoring, I think you'll do okay. But yeah, there's definitely that element. There's a lot of other pieces of things you can draft, bonus points and little tiles you can put out for special abilities, and you can actually collect monks who will work in the yard at one time and blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to go into all those details. It's probably a heavy game at the end of the day to put all the pieces together, but it plays super fast. We played four players in less than an hour. So that's the part that keeps me away from saying this is a heavy game, and I think it's very accessible to people. Castles of Burgundy doesn't quite have this much interaction, but all the different types of tiles do different things, and people are fine. They roll the dice, they draft, they're good. Many people would argue Castle of Burgundy is a light game. I think you could gateway with Castles of Burgundy. It's just kind of plain looking, and why are we doing this? And getting those intricacies of what I'm trying to get score can overwhelm people, and that's how this game is. Like, scoring is overwhelming. But again, kind of like the previous game, the rules are simple. The scoring gets a little complex. There are layers here, so I definitely would not count this as a light game. But medium, medium heavy. And I really enjoyed this game, too. I have not played it, too, but I've heard people playing, too, and they were so-so on it. Wasn't their favorite at 2, so it sounds like, again, this one's going to be better with more. But I really enjoyed Heaven and Ale, so that was a great night at the store. I played all three of those games. Got to do a get-together at my house and play another game of Clans of Caledonia, teaching a couple people that game, and that was fun. Again, I just kind of felt the same read. The market was a little more volatile this game, and that was fun. But basically, if it went way up, we just chose not to really go towards those. Some people would sell them, but even when I had goods to sell at the end, they were worth victory points. So the coin exchange, because 10 coins gives you a victory point. So unless I could sell something for more than 10, and most of the things you could sell for more than 10 were the advanced goods, which are worth 2 victory points, so I needed 20 coins. So the market didn't really seem that big a deal. And yeah, the way it all played out, there's some key things, especially as that board gets filled up with four players, you need to know in terms of scoring. So yeah, that was fun, but I definitely find Gaia Project / Terra Mystica to be better for that. So then... Kathy wanted to go back and dig out some oldies but goodies, and we actually don't own this, so I borrowed Orleans, and we played Orleans Co-op. I think we had only played at TotalCon a couple years ago with some people. We played the Orleans Co-op, and it was really fun, and we got to play again, and we barely won. But it's really fun because you get to a point where you're like, there's no way we can do this, and then all of a sudden you start churning out all sorts of things. So I do really enjoy Orleans. It's super open. I'd have to play the competitive again. Kathy just adores this game. I'm really excited for Altiplano. I'm hoping that that just has a little bit more closedness to it, and that I pick a strategy and run with it, and it's very clear, as opposed to just like, do what you want. Because that's fun, but it just it feels like somebody could just run away with something if they get something working. So that is Orleans. We played Sagrada again, and really enjoyed it, although we both made mistakes with dice and had to put them back, and then it just tanked our scores. So that was kind of strange. Then I got to play Castell. So Castell is a game with a great theme. This is from Renegade Game Studios. And Castell is about building human towers. This game's getting pretty popular now, and so I have a feeling a lot of people have heard of it. But you are going around Catalonia, which is southern Spain, and you are building these castells, which are towers of people. And you're competing in local competitions and in regional festivals is basically what's happening. Again, this is a game that is light on the rules, heavy on the scoring. So I'm explaining the rules piece and some of the scoring to you, just so you can kind of get a piece for what this is like. Most importantly, Castell comes with a giant bag that apparently you put on your head, so you can go to my Twitter and see the picture of me with the Castell bag on my head. My daughter then proceeded to wear the Castell bag around for 10 or 15 minutes in the house. So that is fun and just a funny thing. So anyway, in Castell, what you do on your turn is you take your pawn, and on the first turn you place it on the board in any region. After that, you can move to an adjacent region. Everything's pretty close to each other. They're only two, maybe three regions apart, so it's not a huge thing, but you move to an adjacent region. You can draft two Castellers to join you, so there'll be a whole bunch of people put out at the start of the game, and they will join your team, and your team just keeps growing. You never get rid of people. There's no firing. When you complete a tower, you don't get rid of people. So you just get bigger and bigger, which is key to the game. You can also train. So when you train, you look at this wheel that's around, and it has all the regions, and it has different abilities that you can train. And there are five different abilities that are key, which I may go through a little bit of them here in a second for scoring. But you can train one of those abilities based on what region you're in. And then last, you have seven special action tokens. The game takes place over 10 rounds. By the way, you're trying to get the most victory points. Victory points are going to be the sum of your best human tower plus local competitions that you completed, festivals that you won, and awards and prizes that you got along the way are basically what you're scoring for, as well as how many regions you scored in. So, yeah, and then you can spend these special action tokens. So you get seven per game in 10 rounds. You basically want to use one a round. There's three rounds you can't. And those allow you to get another Casteller, move an additional space, are basically the things you can do there or compete in those local competitions. So that's all you're doing on a turn, and you can do them in any order. So I can recruit two people and then move somewhere and then use my special action to move again and then train in that region if I want to, or blah, 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 blah. So there's some thought process of moving all those around. Which is really interesting, and Castellers go away, and then there's certain rounds where you draw more from the bag. So what's happening with scoring? Because that's a key place. So first off, you're trying to build these human towers. There's a whole bunch of rules, but basically there's people who are numbered based on size, 1 through 10. So 1 is tiny. Those are the people that go on top, tend to be kids in the videos I've seen with helmets on in case they fall. And then the larger people are on the bottom. And you're trying to build these towers, and basically the rules are you have to stack lower numbers on top. You can only be 3 wide. And I don't actually remember the other rule right now. You have to decrease as you go. So you can break the rules. So balance, for example, is kind of one of the most common ones. Balance allows you to have, if you have one level of balance training, I can have 3 people in my bottom row and then 3 people on the row above them, and then 2 and 1. So there's no restriction on height. It's just how your other restrictions work depend on how high you can go. And height is basically your goal, because that's what you're going to score points for a lot of the time. So you're increasing all these stats. Strength lets you put, so if I have 2 points of strength, I can put a 9 on top of an 8, and I can put them out of order. And yada, 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 the different ranks you have determine different things. So you're trying to go to these local competitions, which are focused on your skills. So the local competitions will be like, you must have 2 points of strength, a point of balance, and a base that can be infinitely wide, which is one of the abilities. And go there and build a tower using all those abilities, and boom, you score that one for points. And then the festivals, which are at regions, they just happen at the end of the round. They're not waiting for anybody to show up. It just happens at the end of that round, and it's telling you the number of people you need to have. You need to have a 10, an 8, and a 4. And if you have all of those, you can compete. And now this is where you're going to score points. You're going to do your height plus the number of all those people. That's going to be your score. But kind of like Colosseum from TMG and prior Days of Wonder, your score is your best score. So you don't keep adding your score, you just take your best score. Love that. That's really fun because it encourages you to do more and not just a whole bunch. But get one good score and you'll do well. In fact, I want to play a game where I just try to get some outrageous score and run with that. So that's what's happening and what you're trying to do in there and work with all this. So it's all in that, like, trying to figure out how to put them all together. And what's really fun is you're adding more people and you're training more, so you're getting more. So your tower's just getting bigger and bigger, and you get this tower that takes up half the table, and it's just super fun, and all these different ways you can manipulate it. You have totally no downtime, basically, because you're, like, rebuilding your tower and trying, oh, if I use this skill here instead, oh, it's my turn, okay, well, this is the best I got. I mean, unless you want to do that. Now, there could be a ton of AP. I was afraid of this game at four players because I was just afraid the AP would be through the roof. Kathy and I threw it down in like an hour, hour and 15 minutes, and then I played with three at the store. Same thing, hour, hour and 15 minutes. There's no reason for that because more people is just more turns, but you're thinking about what you're doing on other people's turns. So unless you run across those like one or two people that are just going to not even know what they want to do till their turn and then be thinking it out, I don't think it's too bad. This right now is my favorite game of 2018. I talked about all those games I love that I played, but I still think this is my favorite game here that I've played in 2018. I'm just looking over some others that I've done. Pandemic Rising Tide, Kalimala, Get the MacGuffin was very fun. But yeah, no, I definitely think this has been it. I don't know what it is about this game. Other people seem to kind of be like, yeah, no, that was fun. I'm glad I played it and those kind of things, but I have just thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's just been a blast. So I definitely highly recommend Castell. Probably be in my top 10 games of the year. I'll throw this down every time, especially at that hour, hour and 15 with new players. That's awesome. So that should go over well. I will update and let you know as I play it more if I feel differently. I still got a bunch more to talk about. I think I'm 30 minutes in, but I know people like to hear about games, so I'm going to keep going. Sakura from Osprey Games. Got to play this three-player. Sakura is a pretty light game. Basically, the idea is you are painters, you're artists, and you're trying to paint the emperor in Japan as he goes around to see the cherry blossoms. And so he will stop at three different cherry blossom trees, and you want to be as close as possible. But if you ever move up and touch the emperor, you disgrace yourself, and you have to move back. So you have a hand of cards. Everybody picks one face down, you flip them face up, has a number at the bottom, you go least to greatest, and you do whatever's on there. And they have different actions like move the emperor, move the person in the lead back, move the person in the back forward, move in front of the front person, things like this, or just move your own pawn forward. You never land on people, so you always jump over them, except the emperor. If you land on or beyond his space, you're disgraced and you move backward. You lose a victory point. When the emperor gets to a cherry blossom tree, you stop and you score 3-2-1. I think in a higher player count, it's 3-2-1-1. And you score those victory points and you keep moving. When he gets to the third tree, it's 4-2-1. Whoever has the most victory points from not losing them and gaining them by being closest wins. Wow, after all the other games, that was super fast. So, yeah, it's really fun. I played it with my wife and daughter. And I said, hey, you want to play this again? Or what do you want to do? Should I be done with this one? And they said, no, we definitely want to play that again. So they really enjoyed it too. It's a really light, it's a nice like after dinner type game. It's really pretty. There's not much to it, but it's really quite a beautiful game. So definitely a thumbs up for Sakura. We'll see where it goes from here in plays. But it was definitely enjoyable. Definitely a fun family-esque type game. Played two-player game of Planet Defenders. This is also from Renegade Game Studios. Kind of looks like a kid's game. It comes with these three robots, like little minis, and it looks like a kid's game, but it plays like a Euro. So what happens is you lay out nine tiles in space, and then on the four sides, you put piles of robots, and you're trying to collect those robots. When two piles run out, the game's over. And so what you do on a turn is there are action spaces, action cards, and you put little batteries on them that are resources you have, and then you get to move that robot one or two spaces. So there's three different colored robots, and you move them always orthogonally, full distance. You interact with that space. So someone will say, trade a battery for an energy cube, or roll a die and gain whatever it says on here. There's all sorts of different spaces. and you're just getting these cubes, and then you could either buy a technology upgrade card, or you can purchase a robot from the stack on that side. And the technologies will give you bonuses or ways to get more cubes or whatever, and the robots give you endgame points and sometimes resources. So the ones that give you 1 or 2 points give you a bunch of resources. If they give you 4 or 5 points, they don't really give you resources. The game ends when 2 of those stacks run out, and then it's just a big point salad for set collection. How many technologies did you have? How many different robots did you have? How many points did you have in all those? Resources aren't worth anything. So it's a, you know, medium scoring game, 20 to 30 points per player, and goes from there. It's a cool game. I won on a tiebreaker, which might have been resources or batteries at that point, so they might be important for that. But it was neat. It's like I said, it plays like a Euro. You're trying to figure out, oh, on those action cards, when you pick one at the end of your turn, it then flips over and has a different robot that can move. So you can kind of keep that from one player. Interesting in that front. So, yeah, that was neat. Zooball. I played Zooball quickly. This is from Osprey Games. It's a light dexterity flicking game. My daughter just loved this game. We played 3 games in a row. It's just you have a bunch of blockers and you have a score and you're just flicking them across the mat. It kind of looks like a soccer pitch. And you've got to get in this little ring with your score. Your blockers you're just using to move people out of the way or to block so that you have a clear shot for your score. And you're just trying to get 3 points and then you win. It was great. We're shooting discs all over. She was having a blast, you know, for a quick dexterity game. And again, another after dinner. We've had all these snow days. So it's been after lunch or after dinner. We're just playing games at the table. And that's where all these things have come out. Cool. And then I got to play Empires of the Void 2. So Empires of the Void 2 is... Hold on one second. Hang on. Okay. Empires of the Void 2 is the newest game from Red Raven Games and Ryan Lockett. It is a sequel to Empires of the Void, nothing like Empires of the Void, which I have played by myself. I don't think I've played with other people. And I was hoping it would actually be more like that, because Empires of the Void is a cool take on Nexus Ops, an Avalon Hill game from the 90s that I really enjoy. Maybe 2000, somewhere right in there. And I was hoping that it would be a take on that, and people, oh, wow, this is really different, but it's more of a Euro. It's a big game. So Near and Far can be big in scope and story. This game is big in scope of size. Minis and all sorts of cool things. Board. So we played a 5-player game. The quick rundown here is you're trying to get victory points. The game is based on a set of cards. When that deck runs out, that you finish that round and play another round. And keep going from there. So in Empires of the Void, there's all sorts of different things you can do. You can take over and control planets by force. You can diplomacy with planets to get them to be your allies to score points. You're collecting resources. You're upgrading by building academies and bases and cities on different planets to upgrade your abilities. But at the end of the day, it's action selection. So a player is the captain. They pick an action. They're going to move an attack. They move an attack, and then it goes around the table, and everybody can choose to do that or pay some command points to do a different action. So the basic actions you can do are move and attack, you can recruit new units, of which is unlimited. You can just recruit whatever you can afford. You can upgrade, I think research and build is what it's called. You can just rest and gain all of your resources back. And I can't remember the other one is diplomacy or play a card. You can just play an action card from your hand. So those are all the different abilities. I'm not going to go through each thing in detail. I think there's too much here for me to break down in terms of what's happening. But that's the basic idea. So you're going around the table and trying to take these over. What's creative in the game is there is a colonization card you can play at any point, and you score full victory points, whatever you have at that moment. There's a couple empire cards you have, which will score, oh, if you've built 3 cities, or you have recruited this many units, or whatever. You get to score for that. So you can play that any time. So if you feel like your empire is at its peak, and it's only going to head down from here, you play that card. There's a scorecard in the deck. When that comes out, everybody has to play their card by the end of that round. So basically on your turn, you'll play it, unless you think you're doing better otherwise. Or you're forced to play it at the end of the round. And so that's what's happening, and then you keep playing, and then you'll score full points again at the end. So there's kind of 2 scorings. When you win a battle, you score a point. There's a couple action cards you can do where you can score a point. The action cards will have things like complete a mission, so it'll just trigger if you do something. There's pick up and deliver. Go get this good from this planet. Bring it over here. There's just a lot of different things going on. There's a lot of special abilities. You get these ally tiles, which give you a special ability for just allying with them, and then the units have a special ability, so there's a lot of things to read. This was tough. We played five. We were around a table at the portal. It was basically big enough, but reading the other side of the board, remembering all the abilities, even with the things, was tough for people. And I don't know why, but following everybody's actions somehow slowed the game down. Like, it didn't feel as satisfying to follow somebody's move and attack or diplomacy action as it did to choose it myself. And so that definitely slowed the game down and was tough for people. There is a variant where you can just pick your action and nobody follows. One of the options for following is just to refresh. So that seems pretty good in a five-player game because you collect income, you get your command back. Command is basically how you move around the board. So when you run out of command, you can't move. But again, everything is unlimited up to the limit you've created. I can move this far, but as much as I want. Or to that point, I can spend as much money as I have, which is really neat when you recruit. So there's that piece. It was kind of 50-50 around the table. I was enjoying it, even though it was moving slow. There was a lot of abilities. I seemed to be able to remember those. Other people were frustrated, trying to figure things out. So we kind of finished a round early. We drew the card on the first player's turn, and then we were supposed to finish that round in another round. With five, we felt like, let's just finish this round. So we were one round short, but had the other player just drawn one more card on their turn, it would have triggered that way anyway. So it wasn't a big difference in terms of that. And then there's a bunch of endgame scoring and whatnot. I felt like it was a lot at five, and like I said, people were down on it. It was not Near and Far. Near and Far is just gold. That game is so good. Talked to Ryan about that on Jason Perez's podcast. Every Night is Game Night. I was on an episode there, and we talked to him, as well as Kathy and I talked about it on here. And there's just something about Near and Far. It is really light, and this one's heavier. But in this case, I think the heaviness just kind of... It's more cinematic, I guess, and there's a lot more things you can do. It's very sandboxy in that sense. But I was enjoying it. I believe Brian was enjoying too. I want to try it two-player. Kathy's obviously averse to space games, but this is Ryan Lockett, so it's so pretty. She said she'd like to play it. I don't mean that as in a negative way towards her. Just, hey, this looks good. Aesthetic is important to her more so than it is to Brian and myself at times. So she said, yeah, I would definitely try that. So I may do that there or sneak a game in with Brian. But again, that two-player thing, like, what else could we be playing? So I'll have to see, but it was a neat game. Enjoyed playing that. Yeah, and then last up, I played Fog of War. But I'm going to wait to talk about that with Brian because we played that together, Jeff Engelstein game, and I've been going on and on for a while. So I think we'll move on. All right, so just quick for discussion here because, the episode's getting kind of long. I want to talk about what Tom Vass was talking about on Board Game Breakfast. So on an episode or two ago, he talked about being the facilitator. I believe this was brought up on the Dice Tower Facebook group, which there's like 6,000 people. If you haven't joined that, definitely do that. That's a lot of fun in there. And I do agree with him, like, just get rid of all the, I'm eating a jelly sandwich and I hate this president or love this president or whatever, and just fill it with board game stuff. It is exciting. And Facebook, I actually go on Facebook more often just to see some of that stuff. But he was talking about being the facilitator of a game. And people I know who are watching this were like, oh my goodness, this is Brandt. And I was listening to it going, this is totally me. I am basically just as happy to sit and watch people play a game where I'm involved. So where I can help hand out tokens, explain the game, teach the rules, clarify, those kind of things. I really enjoy this. I very often am well known for like, well, this game plays four and we have five, so I'll watch. So you four play, or we're playing a four-player game, we're on round one, somebody walks in, I'm like, oh, take my spot. I'll even do it on round two or three for a game that's not, Century Spice Road or something, where it's not like we've gotten that far. I'm happy to do that. Usually people are more of like, oh, I wasn't there from the start, I didn't hear the rules. I'm like, I'll walk you through it. But I really enjoy this element. Why? I don't know. But I know that teaching games is one of my favorite parts. I think I've mentioned it before, but like heavy games aren't necessarily my favorite games. But breaking them down and learning them and explaining them to people, I love. So I love it if I take a game, PAX Renaissance or something, and I figure it out. And I finally, I'm playing it on my own, and I get frustrated. And then I go sit down and teach it to people, and they help me clarify a couple things. I teach it again to this group and this group. And then somebody walks in and goes, wow, that's one of my favorite games. And I go, yeah, I might be done with that game. It's not really my favorite, but I love that you enjoyed it and I was able to teach it to you. So I know there's a difference between teaching and facilitating. And so I want to explain that. So teaching, some, you know, most people are usually pretty happy to teach something. They can get a little bit confused at times, and there's definitely a skill to teaching a game, which is something I think that I do have. But facilitating a game is just helping to make sure it happens. So, you know, there are games where there are facilitators. A Werewolf, for example, has a facilitator built into it. I guess Alchemists could have a facilitator to find out all those things. If you don't use the app, I wouldn't understand why people would do that. I would think you would just use the app. But there's that element where you're not part of the game. You have no stake in who wins or loses. I suppose you could be helping people. But I'll do those kind of things, or I'll clarify spaces, or I even don't mind, okay, you know, person A, B, C, D, and A is taking their turn, so I'm explaining some options to C and D that they could be doing on their turn. Again, I don't want to play the game for them. I don't want to draw their cards. I don't want to roll their dice. I don't want to move their pieces. I don't even want to suggest what they should do, because then I feel like I'm on their team, which is a whole different thing, and that's fine too, but I just want to give them the out. Oh, remember, you can do this. I'm well known for doing, oh, remember, you can do this. You probably don't want to, but remember, you can. I try to say that when it doesn't matter, as opposed to when I think they should do it. I don't want to be saying it then. I'm also notorious for forgetting rules until I'm about to use them. But there's that piece. But I really like this facilitate piece. What I don't know is, do people feel like I'm in control or have to be in control? That's where I named the episode, You Must Learn Control. Like, where do I need to just step away and let people play? So sometimes what I'll do is I'll teach a game and I'll get people through a round or two and then I just walk away and just let them ask me questions as they need to. And I think that is more enjoyable for people and try to do those things. So I do this like at the library events if I teach. I try to just back away and let people just play the game where they can. So there's that piece. But I really like this idea of the facilitator. You know, when I host things at my house, I really just try to get games going. If I can't find somebody to teach two and we've got eight people, I'll teach one and then teach the other. Or, hey, let's play the same game side by side. I'll teach both. Those kind of things, because I think that's really exciting. But yeah, facilitating is just absolutely awesome, and I'd love to do it. So if you would like me to facilitate a game for you, don't be afraid to ask. I am more than willing to do it if you've already got a certain number of people. It really doesn't bother me. And so I think it's good for people to know what roles people like and don't like. There are people who just do not want to be the teacher of a game, or they do not want to play a social deduction game and be the traitor. And so you have to kind of decide, it's got to be random. So are we going to play that way, or what are we going to do? So it's good to know the roles that people have. And, you know, as you build more of a community and get to know each other, that's kind of what you're doing. So I think that's an important piece. So hopefully facilitating helps to build community, because it helps to bring people together. People have somebody they can bounce the rules off of and whatnot. So it's just a really fun thing for me to do. I think that's it. I think that is this episode, number 81. All in the books. Control, control. You must learn control. So that's it for now. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be on the lookout for some upcoming episodes, more information on International Tabletop Day, and whatnot. But I think that is it. So until the next time, I am your host, The Brant, and I hope that you step into the portal. Portal Game Podcast is the product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on Pi Day 2018. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Hey, thanks for listening.